Chapter 11. When they alighted in front of the arbiter's house, the chief of the atrium answered them that of slaves sent to the gates none had returned yet. The Atriensis had given orders to take food to them, and a new command, that under penalty of rods they were to watch carefully all who left the city. Thou seest, said Petronius, that they are in Rome, beyond doubt, and in that case we shall find them. But command thy people also, to watch at the gates, those, namely, who were sent for Lygia, as they will recognize her easily. I have given orders to send them to rural prisons, said Vinicius, but I will recall the orders at once, and let them go to the gates. And writing a few words on a wax-covered tablet, he handed it to Petronius, who gave directions to send it at once to the house of Vinicius. Then they passed into the interior portico, and, sitting on the marble bench, began to talk. The golden-haired Eunice, and has pushed bronze footstools under their feet, and poured wine for them in two goblets, out of wonderful narrow-necked pitchers from Volaterr Tilda and Cassina. Hast thou among thy people anyone who knows that giant legend? Asked Petronius. Atacinus and Gulo knew him, but Atacinus fell yesterday at the litter, and Gulo I killed. I am sorry for him, said Petronius. He carried not only thee, but me, in his arms. I intended to free him, answered Vinicius, but do not mention him. Let us speak of Lygia. Rome is a sea is just the place, where men fish for pearls. Of course we shall not find her today, or tomorrow, but we shall find her surely. Thou hast accused me just now of giving thee this method, but the method was good in itself, and became bad only when turned to bad. Thou hast heard from Aulus himself, that he intends to go to Sicily with his whole family. In that case the girl would be far from thee. I should follow them, said Vinicius, and in every case she would be out of danger. But now, if that child dies, Poppy will believe, and will persuade Caesar, that she died because of Lygia. True, that alarmed me too. But that little doll may recover. Should she die, we shall find some way of escape. Here Petronius meditated a while and added, Poppy, it is said, follows the religion of the Jews, and believes in evil spirits. Caesar is superstitious. If we spread the report that evil spirits carried off Lygia, the news will find belief, especially as neither Caesar nor Aulus Plautius intercepted her. Her escape was really mysterious. The legend could not have effected it alone. He must have had help. And where could a slave find so many people in the course of one day? Slaves help one another in Rome. Some person pays for that with blood at times. True, they support one another, but not some against others. In this case it was known that responsibility and punishment would fall on thy people. If thou give thy people the idea of evil spirits, they will say at once that they saw such with their own eyes, because that will justify them in thy sight. Ask one of them, as a test, if he did not see spirits carrying off Lygia through the air, he will swear at once by the aegis of Zeus that he saw them. Vinicius, who was superstitious also, looked at Petronius with sudden and great fear. If Ursus could not have men to help him, and was not able to take her alone, who could take her? Petronius began to laugh. See, said he, they will believe, since thou art half a believer thyself. Such is our society, which ridicules the gods. They too, will believe, and they will not look for her. Meanwhile we shall put her away somewhere far off from the city, in some villa of mine or thine. But who could help her? Her co-religionists, answered Petronius. Who are they? What deity does she worship? I ought to know that better than thou. Nearly every woman in Rome honors a different one. It is almost beyond doubt that Pomponia reared her in the religion of that deity which she herself worships. What one she worships one know not. One thing is certain, that no person has seen her make an offering to our gods in any temple. They have accused her even of being a Christian. But that is not possible. A domestic tribunal cleared her of the charge. They say that Christians not only worship an ass's head, but are enemies of the human race, and permit the foulest crimes. Pomponia cannot be a Christian, as her virtue is known, and an enemy of the human race could not treat slaves as she does. In no house are they treated as idolaters, interrupted Vinicius. Ah! Pomponia mentioned to me Sony God, who must be one powerful and merciful. Whereas he has put away all the others is her affair, it is enough that logos of hers cannot be very mighty, or rather he must be a very weak god, since he has had only two adherents, Pomponia, and Lygia, and Ursus in addition. It must be that there are more of those adherents, and that they assisted Lygia. That faith commands forgiveness, said Vinicius. At I met Pomponia, who said to me, May God forgive thee the evil which thou hast done to us and to Lygia. Apostrophe, evidently their god is some curator who is very mild. Ha! Let him forgive thee, and in sign of forgiveness return thee the maiden. I would offer him a hecatomb tomorrow. I have no wish for food, or the bath, or sleep. I will take a dark lantern and wander through the city. Perhaps I shall find her in disguise. I am sick. Petronius looked at him with commiseration. In fact, there was blue under his eyes, his pupils were gleaming with fever, his unshaven beard indicated a dark strip on his firmly outlined jaws, his hair was in disorder, and he w-a-tilde really like a sick man. Iris and the golden-haired Eunice looked at him also with sympathy, but he seemed not to see them, and he and Petronius took no notice whatever of the slave women, just as they would not have noticed dogs moving around them. Fever is tormenting thee, said Petronius. It is. Then listen to me. I know not what the doctor has prescribed to thee, but I know how I should act in thy place. Till this lost one is found I should seek in another, that which for the moment has gone from me with her. I saw splendid forms at thy villa. Do not contradict me. I know what love is, and I know that, when one is desired another cannot take her place. But in a beautiful slave it is possible to find even momentary distraction. I do not need it, said Vinicius. But Petronius, who had for him a real weakness, and who wished to soften his pain, began to meditate how he might do so. Perhaps thine have not for thee the charm of novelty, said he, after a while, and here he began to look in turn at Iris and Eunice, and finally he placed his palm on the hip of the golden-haired Eunice. Look at this grace, for whom some days since Fontius Capitan the younger offered three wonderful boys from Clazomen. A more beautiful figure than hers even Scopas himself has not chiseled. I myself cannot tell why I have remained indifferent to her thus far, since thoughts of Chrysothemis have not restrained me. Well, I give her to thee, take her for thyself. When the golden-haired Eunice heard this, she grew pale in one moment, and, looking with frightened eyes on Vinicius, seemed to wait for his answer without breath in her breast. But he sprang up suddenly, and, pressing his temples with his hands, said quickly, like a man who is tortured by disease, and will not hear anything, Oh, no! I care not for her. I care not for others. I thank thee, but I do not want her. I will seek that one through the city. Give command to bring me a Gallic cloak with a hood. I will go beyond the Tiber if I could see even Ursus. And he hurried away. Petronius, seeing that he could not remain in one place, did not try to detain him. Taking, however, his refusal as a temporary dislike for all women save Lygia, and not wishing his own magnanimity to go for naught, he said, turning to the slave, Anais, thou wilt bathe and anoint thyself, then dress. After that thou wilt go to the house of Vinicius. But she dropped before him on her knees, and with joined palms, implored him not to remove her from the house. She would not go to Vinicius, she said. She would rather carry fuel to the hypocaustum in his house, than be chief servant in that of Vinicius. She would not, she could not go, and she begged him to have pity on her. Let him give command to flog her daily, only not send her away. and trembling like a leaf with fear and excitement, she stretched her hands to him, while he listened with amazement. A slave who ventured to beg relief from the fulfillment of a command, who said, "I will not, and I cannot," was something so unheard of in Rome, that Petronius could not believe his own ears at first. Finally he frowned. He was too refined to be cruel. His slaves, especially in the department of pleasure, were freer than others, on condition of performing their service in an exemplary manner, and honoring the will of their master, like that of a god. In case they failed in these two respects, he was able not to spare punishment, to which, according to general custom, they were subject. Since, besides this, he could not endure opposition, nor anything which ruffled his calmness, he looked for a while at the kneeling girl, and then said, "All Teresias, and return with him." Eunice rose, trembling, with tears in her eyes, and went out. After a time she returned with the chief of the atrium, Teresias, a Cretan. "Thou wilt take Eunice," said Petronius, "and give her 25 lashes, in such fashion, however, as not to harm her skin." When he had said this, he passed into the library, and, sitting down at a table of rose-colored marble, began to work on his East of Trimachian. But the flight of Lygia and the illness of the infant Augusta had disturbed his mind, so much that he could not work long. That illness, above all, was important. It occurred to Petronius that were Caesar to believe that Lygia had cast spells on the infant, the responsibility might fall on him also, for the girl had been brought at his request to the palace. But he could reckon on this, that at the first interview with Caesar he would be able in some way to show the utter absurdity of such an idea. He counted a little, too, on a certain weakness which Poppaea had for him, a weakness hidden carefully, it is true, but not so carefully, that he could not divine it. After a while he shrugged his shoulders at these fears, and decided to go to the Triclinium to strengthen himself, and then order the litter, to bear him once more to the palace, after that to the Campus Martins, and then to Chrysothemis. But on the way to the Triclinium at the entrance to the corridor assigned to servants, he saw unexpectedly the slender form of Eunice standing, among other slaves, at the wall, and forgetting that he had given Teresias no order beyond flogging her, he wrinkled his brow again, and looked around for the Atriensis. Not seeing him among the servants, he turned to Eunice. "Hast thou received the lashes?" She cast herself at his feet a second time, pressed the border of his toga to her lips, and said, "Yes, Lord, I have received them. Oh, yes, Lord." In her voice were heard, as it were, joy and gratitude. It was clear that she looked on the lashes as a substitute for her removal from the house, and that now she might stay there. Petronius, who understood this, wondered at the passionate resistance of the girl. But he was too deeply versed in human nature not to know that love alone could call forth such resistance. "Dost thou love someone in this house?" asked he. She raised her blue, tearful eyes to him, and answered, in a voice so low that it was hardly possible to hear her, "Yes, Lord." And with those eyes, with that golden hair thrown back, with fear and hope in her face, she was so beautiful, she looked at him so entreatingly, that Petronius, who, as a philosopher, had proclaimed the might of love, and who, as a man of aesthetic nature, had given homage to all beauty, felt for her a certain species of compassion. "Whom of those dost thou love?" inquired he, indicating the servants with his head. There was no answer to that question. Eunice inclined her head to his feet and remained motionless. Petronius looked at the slaves, among whom were beautiful and stately youths. He could read nothing on any face. On the contrary, all had certain strange smiles. He looked then for a while on Eunice lying at his feet, and went in silence to the Triclinium. After he had eaten, he gave command to bear him to the palace, and then to Chrysothemis, with whom he remained till late at night. But when he returned, he gave command to call Teresias. "Did Eunice receive the flogging?" inquired he. "She did, Lord." Thou didst not let the skin be cut, however. Did I give no other command touching her? No, Lord, answered the Atreensis with alarm. That is well. Whom of the slaves does she love? No one, Lord. What dost thou know of her? Tiresias began to speak in a somewhat uncertain voice. At night Eunice never leaves the cuniculum in which she lives with old Acrisina and Aphida. After thou art dressed she never goes to the bathrooms. Other slaves ridicule her, and call her Diana. Enough, said Petronius. M. my relative, Vinicius, to whom I offered her today, did not accept her, hence she may stay in the house. Thou art free to go. Is it permitted me to speak more of Eunice, Lord? I have commanded thee to say all thou knowest. The whole familia are speaking of the flight of the maiden who was to dwell in the house of the noble Vinicius. After thy departure, Eunice came to me, and said that she knew a man who could find her. Ah! What kind of man is he? I know not, Lord, but I thought that I ought to inform thee of this matter. That is well. Let that man wait tomorrow in my house for the arrival of the tribune, whom thou wilt request in my name to meet me here. The Atreensis bowed and went out. But Petronius began to think of Eunice. At first it seemed clear to him that the young slave wished Vinicius to find Lydia for this reason only, that she would not be forced from his house. Afterward, however, it occurred to him that the man whom Eunice was pushing forward might be her lover, and all at once that thought seemed to him disagreeable. There was, it is true, a simple way of learning the truth, for it was enough to summon Eunice, but the hour was late. Petronius felt tired after his long visit with Chrysothemis, and was in a hurry to sleep. But on the way to the cubiculum he remembered, it is unknown why, that he had noticed wrinkles, that day, in the corners of Chrysothemis's eyes. He thought, also, that her beauty was more celebrated in Rome than it deserved, and that Fontius Capitan, who had offered him 3 boys from Clazomenc for Eunice, wanted to buy her too cheaply. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.